You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Benedict Jones.
And I'm Leanne Moroz. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, July 2nd, 2018.
It just so happened to be that building was an after-hours haven of jazz musicians and some classical musicians as well. Some people like Thelonious Monk, Chick Corea, Steve Reich, the classical composer.
Later in the program, WFHB correspondent Michael Glab speaks with local author Sam Stevenson, who has just released a new book about Gene Smith, a photographer and photo essayist who documented some of jazz music's greatest figures by being in the right place and the right time. That's coming up on today's edition of Big Talk Extra with Michael Glab.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Mona Clay has volunteered with Girls Inc. for 3 years. Clay knows that consistency is important for girls. We'll hear more about her journey with Girls Inc. on Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community. But first, your daily headlines.
Senator Joe Donnelly stopped in Ellettsville this afternoon. The incumbent Democrat is up for re-election this fall. Donnelly toured the Ellettsville home of Smithville Fiber. According to a press release from his office, Donnelly is currently promoting legislative efforts to improve rural high-speed internet services. Donnelly ran unopposed in last month's statewide primary, receiving over 8,000 votes. This fall, he'll face Republican Senate candidate Mike Braun. The largely self-funded millionaire from Jasper beat out incumbent Congressman Todd Rokita and Luke Messer in a brutal primary that garnered national attention. Messer took home over 208,000 votes during the May 8th primary. U.S. senators serve staggered six-year terms.
A statewide law concerning the identity of parents who surrendered their children for adoption went into effect yesterday. WFHB News Director Wes Martin brings us that report.
The Indiana State Department of Health now requires parents who anonymously place their children into the adoption system to fill out a privacy form in order to remain anonymous. Senate Enroll Act 91, which was passed by the 2016 legislature, changed statewide adoption laws in Indiana. Under two previous pieces of legislation, the parents of children turned over for adoption before 1993 were all anonymous. That changed in 1994. The legislature then determined that parents had to sign a form to retain their anonymity when surrendering their children for adoption. Now, Senate Enroll Act 91 makes information available for all parents who gave their children up for adoption. That includes those who were previously anonymous before 1994. Senate Enroll Act 91 went into effect yesterday. Now, parents who wish to remain anonymous have to sign a form with the Indiana State Department of Health. That form is available on the department's website at in.gov/ISDH. For WFHB, I'm Wes Martin.
The Indiana State Department of Health recorded a net increase in the number of abortion procedures carried out in the state. That's according to the latest figures tracked by the department. ISDH has yet to release their 2017 Induced Terminated Pregnancies report to the general public, but both pro-choice and pro-life agencies confirm the report documents an increase in the number of reported abortions performed throughout the state. Indiana Right to Life noted the increase in abortions as a justification for greater restrictions on abortion. The pro-life organization stated they will back a total abortion ban to be proposed during next year's legislative session. The bill is expected to be advanced by Republican Goshen Representative Kurt Nisley. Nisley's office did not return a request for comment. Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky Executive Director Christy Gillespie says the rise in abortion rates in the state make it clear that Indiana needs to do a better job in sex education.
Women are clearly in positions where they need to seek terminating an unplanned pregnancy, and they're getting those services. And instead of focusing on the rise in abortion, what we really should be looking at are ways to reduce abortion. And research shows that the best way to do that is to provide comprehensive, medically accurate sex education and to provide accessible, low-cost birth control.
Gillespie says the rise in abortion rates in the state directly follows a lack of decent sex education, which she blames on the conservative-dominated state legislature.
Unfortunately, our state legislature seems to be going in the opposite direction to make comprehensive sex education less accessible. And so I don't think we should be surprised to see, you know, abortion rates rise.
Gillespie says that if any bill attempting to outlaw abortion in the state is introduced next legislative session, it would easily be defeated.
We have been down this road many, many years, so it baffles me why we continue to have legislators who insist on filing bills that are unconstitutional from the get-go.
Gillespie says she'd rather have the legislature tackle Indiana's maternity mortality rate. Mothers across the state die at twice the national average.
It is double the national rate, and the legislature did take, you know, one step over the summer to create the study commission to look at it, to figure out strategies how to bring that down. But that's what we really should be focused on, is women's health issues that we know are negatively impacting women and, in fact, causing death for women.
As of this broadcast, it was unclear when the Indiana State Department of Health will release the 2017 Induced Terminated Pregnancies Report to the general public.
Indiana University alumni elected Donna Spears to the IU Board of Trustees. Elections results were announced over the weekend. Spears received over 4,000 votes out of nearly 14,000. Spears has previously served as the national chair of the IU Alumni Association's Board of Managers. She has also served on the IU Alumni Affairs Executive Council. Spears is one of three elected to the Board of Trustees. She replaces Phil Askew, who just concluded his term and finished just behind Spears in Friday's ballot count. The six other board members are appointed by the state governor. All trustees serve three-year terms, with the exception of the student trustee, who serves a two-year term. Since alumni-elected trustees serve rotating terms, alumni vote for one each year. Spears' election comes after the IU Board of Trustees approved 1.4% in-state tuition increase in its meeting in Gary last month. The increase in tuition will take place over two consecutive years, gradually increasing tuition over 3%. In their same meeting, the Board of Trustees approved over $17 million to be used to build a new international center on the IU Bloomington campus. Money from that development is expected to be split between Indiana University and the IU Foundation.
Raw sewage overflows from sanitation drains are expected to be corrected early next month. The City of Bloomington's Public Works Department is currently working on a sewage interceptor project at the intersection of South Walnut and Grimes. Utilities Public Affairs Specialist John Callahan says, although the street and curbs will look the same when construction is done next month, the difference to area residents should be immense.
The purpose of this project is to address the occurrence of sanitary sewer overflows, particularly in the area of West Grimes Lane and South Walnut Street, where more than 80 were confirmed between the years 2006 and 2016. And this increase in sewer capacity will reduce SSO occurrence and volume and will likely eliminate discharge from smaller wet weather events.
Callahan says the project should stop the high number of sewage overflows along South Walnut. He says a deluge of rain can overflow the city's old sewer infrastructure, causing treated sewage to leak into streets and creeks.
It just looks looks like water. I mean, there's no solids in it. You might see, in some cases, you might see some toilet paper, possibly, but you don't see any solids, and primarily it's just liquid.
Callahan says the new sewer interceptor project will reduce the number of sewage overflows in the area and replace outdated clay sewage pipes with newer plastic ones. The city is expected to complete the project early August. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Benedict Jones.
And I'm Leanne Moroz. The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Support for WFHB comes from listeners like you and from the IU Health Foundation, where local gifts stay local, serving patients for a healthier Bloomington. Sam Stevenson ran across the groundbreaking works of photo essayist Gene Smith a few years ago. Stevenson became almost obsessed with Smith's photos, as well as the thousands of hours of audio tapes Smith had made while living in a seedy loft in New York City Market District from the mid-1950s through the 60s. By chance, Smith had moved next door to another loft where some of America's biggest names in jazz gathered nightly to practice and jam. Stevenson's near obsession eventually became the Jazz Loft Project, a book and traveling exhibition of Smith's work in New York. Stevenson last year released a second book called Gene Smith's Sink. He joined host Michael Glab on last week's Big Talk. Here's a recap of that show on this week's Big Talk Extra.
Hi, this is Big Talk. Michael Glab here. My guest this week in the studio, author, jazz maven, Sam Stevenson. Sam, thanks for being on Big Talk.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you very much.
Sam, your life, to a large extent, has been devoted to this fellow, Gene Smith. Who's Gene Smith?
Well, he made his name as a combat photographer in World War II. And then he went on to be a Life magazine photo essayist. If you Googled him, you'd often see the phrase, the master of the photographic essay or the father of the photographic essay. He was a pioneer in creating visual stories, which back before television was the primary way that people received their imagery were in weekly or monthly magazine stories. And Life magazine, of course, was the powerhouse of that model.
I've looked at some of his images, and he's got that gritty, stark kind of photography that it wasn't perfumed. It didn't pull any punches.
He called himself a photojournalist from until he died. And I believe he was kind of riddled by this tension between journalism and art.
Huh.
And so he was always looking for gritty things, and sometimes if they weren't there, he would insert them into the picture.
How did you get interested in this fellow?
Well, it started in 1997. I was fascinated by the city of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and was interested in writing my own book on Pittsburgh, and I stumbled upon a reference to Eugene Smith's unfinished Pittsburgh project from the 1950s. To make a long story short, Smith went to Pittsburgh in 1955 for a three-week assignment and ended up staying for 4 years and made 22,000 photos in the city, and he never finished the project. So what I did was I tried to pick up the pieces of his failed Pittsburgh project. So my first project was a little, what I thought was a fairly benign magazine article about Smith's Pittsburgh project. It's for a magazine called Double Take. And here I am today, 20 years later, more than 20 years later, and I'm just finishing all of that work. In 1955, he quit Life magazine, where he had been highly successful for more than a decade. He gave all of that up because he was not happy with the artistic limitations that he felt at the magazine. He felt like the editors were not giving him enough artistic freedom. He had a wife and four kids living out in Croton on Hudson.
Mm-hmm.
They had a really big house, and he was having trouble finishing the Pittsburgh project. It's just the ambitions kept going up and up and up, and it just was impossible. And he was also addicted to alcohol and addicted to amphetamines, and so these kind of cycles of highs and lows. He was also probably almost certainly bipolar.
Hmm.
So he had these cycles of 5 days without sleeping, just working, and then he would crash. And it just was a way of life that wasn't conducive to being in a family home. So he left in 1957 and moved into this dilapidated building on 6th Avenue and 28th Street in New York City. And it just so happened to be that building was an after-hours haven of jazz musicians.
Uh-huh.
And hundreds of jazz musicians and some classical musicians as well.
Really well-known guys.
Yeah, some people like Thelonious Monk, Chick Corea, Steve Reich, the classical composer, went there, as well as very obscure figures as well. It was a perfect habitat for him. The musicians were all there to jam.
You discovered about 40,000 photographic images. You found about 1,700 hours of tapes, audio tapes.
I was working on the Pittsburgh project when I found in the back of his photography archive at the University of Arizona these boxes full of tapes, reel-to-reel tapes, and they'd been in the same boxes since the archive was created back in the 1970s. And I started picking through them on one of my trips out there, and I just noticed these names like Thelonious Monk on there and others, Zoot Sims and Bill Evans and other names, Art Farmer. And so I just became curious about those tapes, and no one had ever heard them before because the University of Arizona had the rightful policy that the tapes needed to be properly preserved before they were played back.
Because running them through a machine could degrade them.
Could damage them, yeah. And that was the right policy. But it made it daunting because it meant we had to raise a lot of money to preserve those tapes before we could listen to them. He had the building wired from the sidewalk up to the fifth floor. He wired the stairwell. He wired the fire escape. I mean, he was recording great jazz jam sessions, but he was also recording street noise, people walking up and down the stairs, things off radio and TV, random conversations.
In a sense, he lost his mind?
Well, you'd have to say that if someone did that now, you know, that you knew in your neighborhood, that you'd probably reach that conclusion. So in addition to photographing the jazz musicians inside the building, he exposed an equal number of negatives through the window of life in the neighborhood. And again, that's just really invaluable because he documented that corner from that one vantage point in a way. I often said he was like a biologist studying a half acre, of forest. So I got really lucky. In 1999... I published an article about this building in New York City in Double Take magazine, but I had not heard the tapes because they still needed to be preserved. So I wrote an article about it. It was covered on CBS Sunday Morning. I was on that show. And in Chicago on that Sunday morning, there was a wealthy man named David Logan on his, he said later, he was on his treadmill watching CBS Sunday Morning as he did every Sunday. And there was this story about my article with me. And so he went and found the magazine, read it. And then a few weeks later, I get this call out of the blue. And David Logan said, I read your article. I saw your spot on TV. What can we do to help?
Sam Stevenson, the author of Gene Smith's Sink, a brand new book out in the bookstores now. Sam, thank you for being on Big Talk.
Thank you, Michael. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
That was author and archivist Sam Stevenson talking about his book and exhibition, The Jazz Loft Project, with host Michael Glab on Big Talk Extra. Full episodes of Big Talk air Thursdays at 5:30 p.m. right here on WFHB.
Support for WFHB comes from Laurenwood Builders. Laurenwood Builders is a family-owned company that sources local materials and local craftsmen to minimize environmental impact and sustain community. More information is available online at laurenwoodbuilders.com.
Now it's time for Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
Welcome to Activate, featuring tales of inspiration from local citizens who stand up for what they believe in and encouraging you to find your cause, live your passion, make a difference. Volunteer.
Hi, my name is Mona Clay. I am a volunteer and now board member at Girls Inc. of Monroe County, and I've been volunteering there for 3 years, since January 2015. What brought me to Girls Inc. was a research study that I was doing with my advisor at the time. This was several years ago. And we were going to ask the girls to respond to some survey questions and things like that. So we walk into Girls Inc. and we go into the gym. And it was one of those moments where you kind of get, you know, goosebumps, where you know you're walking into something that's kind of transformative and like this really beautiful experience. We walked in right in the middle of this program and they were sharing I am messages. So they were saying things like, I am strong because I can run fast, or I am smart because I got an A on this paper that I did. And it was such a beautiful thing to walk into and see from the outside in that these girls were having these really beautiful moments about themselves and realizing these things that, you know, are much more internal that we don't necessarily hear all that often. That was kind of the moment where I thought, okay, this is a really special place. I am gonna remember this. And then we had to keep going and, you know, work through the study that we were doing. But I bookmarked it in my mind, and probably a year or so later, I got back in contact. And I started volunteering regularly, and I've been there now for 3 years. I feel really fortunate to have gone to Girls Inc. at a really pivotal moment of my own education. At that time, I was studying sexual socialization through the media, and specifically focusing on the media that is tailored to adolescents and tweens. So I am very familiar with the messages that are tailored to girls now that are not very empowering, that can be very discouraging to young girls. And so while I was studying that, and then to see Girls Inc. as this beautiful, amazing organization that empowers young girls, that really made an impact on me and has carried me forward in my own studies. Now what I focus on, instead of learning how to be strong, smart, and bold, is modeling being strong, smart, and bold for the girls at Girls Inc. And every time I go there, I see that as an opportunity to be a role model or be a mentor for one of those girls and show them how to be strong, smart, and bold. And it's a little selfish because I do get so much gratification from being with them. But there's always a moment that I'm like, ah, that clicked for her. It clicked for me too. And it was great. And we can really grow from this moment. So. Volunteer organizations here, I think in Bloomington, being a college town, they have a lot of turnover. So for somebody to be there consistently, you know, those girls know me and I meet new girls every single week. You know, there are girls who are just now moving to Bloomington. Those are kind of my favorite moments. That's one of my favorite things at Girls Inc. is when I get to meet a new girl on her very first day, because I get to show her what Girls Inc. is. It's this safe space where girls can be themselves. And that can be a very powerful moment for a girl at 8, 9, 10 years old. So it's a really, really rewarding thing. And I feel it from them too, but seeing it through adult eyes is especially great. You know, like knowing what that can be, having been there myself, somebody who's been the recipient of a mentoring relationship. I feel empowered when I'm empowering young girls. I've learned over the years at Girls Inc. that small moments can make big memories for those girls. for the girls that I see every single time I'm there at Girls Inc. And so the more I feel confident in myself and empowered and feeling strong, smart, and bold, the better role model I can be. I still feel a very great responsibility being closer in age to some of these girls, you know, only 20 years or so older than some of them, to show them what it is to be a woman, a young woman, a young adult, and what that's like now for them. I can at least lay a groundwork, a foundation for, you know, being strong, smart, and bold, which is the mission of Girls Inc. Thank you for listening. I am Mona Clay with Girls Incorporated of Monroe County.
You've been listening to Activate, a co-production of WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, working together to build an empowered, vibrant, and engaged community. You may visit bloomington.in.gov/volunteer to find and sign up for local volunteer opportunities. All episodes of Activate are available online at wfhb.org/news/activate. For Bloomington Community Radio, I'm Jennifer Brooks.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin in partnership with CATS, Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Michael Glab.
Activate is produced by Lucy Shake from the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network. Our engineer is Jenna Jankowski. Our theme music is provided by Ben Lumsdane, Scott Schmadke, and Danny Graff. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, I'm Leanne Murrows.
And I'm Benedict Jones. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming online at wfhb.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@wfhb.org.
Stay tuned for Kite Line, a program amplifying the voices of those within Indiana's prison system, coming up next on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a daily local news volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at wfhb.org and catch live broadcast of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.